I want to thank John for inviting me to come up and talk to you folks for a couple of reasons. One was because originally I was planning on running the Big Lake Half Marathon down in Alton near where I live this morning. And when John called up and said, why don't you come up to Pittsburgh, I thought, great, now I don't have to run that half marathon. Now, I could have done like Jim Danis did and combined my exercise and my advocacy, since he rode his bicycle up to the border event. I suppose I could have parked in Colebrook and run up here and then run back down, but I didn't. But thank you, John. The Forest Society came out against Northern Pass as proposed back in December when the deadline for filing motions to intervene in the DOE presidential permit process came about. And we did so after considerable discussion among our Board of Trustees, who ultimately set our policy, as well as other interested friends. And also, not but in no small part, influenced by landowners, our members, landowners, and other landowners, who in New Hampshire are really the ones who steward the forest to a great degree. We own 170 reservations constituting about 50,000 acres, including the Washburn Family Forest across the road. But the state certainly owns a lot of forest land. The federal government owns 800,000 acres, known as the White Mountain National Forest. But ultimately, most of the forest land in New Hampshire is owned by private individuals. And how they steward those lands, and the fact that they steward them in a way that supports not only the forest products industry, but water quality and wildlife and recreation, makes all the difference to us, and I think makes all the difference about what New Hampshire, why we all live in New Hampshire. Northern Pass. So what is Northern Pass? I think most of you know by now Northern Pass is a Northern Pass LLC is essentially a shell company that was created by Northeast Utilities and NSTAR. PSNH is a company that belongs to Northeast Utilities. The project funder is Hydro-Québec. And the projected investment is $1.1 billion in order to build 180 miles of new transmission lines in New Hampshire. 140 miles of those are Pittsburgh to Franklin, and 40 miles of HVAC line from Franklin to Deerfield. The DC power will come down from Canada, be converted to AC in Franklin, and then go as AC, high voltage AC, from Franklin to Deerfield. What are the milestones in this process? Well, in September 2009, FERC approved the persistent funding, essentially the structure of the deal that Northeast Utilities, operating as Northern Pass, made with Hydro-Québec. Last October, there was a big announcement of the preferred corridor in Franklin, and that's when the governor first came out in favor of the project. One can understand that in October, with an election looming in which there was no guarantee that a Democratic governor was going to get reelected, that Governor Lynch was quick to jump on what appeared to be something that offered good jobs and renewable energy and what's not to like. Soon after, as we began to understand more about what this really was, it became apparent there's quite a bit not to like. The timeline going forward. There's a timeline that the applicant would like to have, and there's a timeline that's more likely to occur. As many of you know, because I've seen you at the DOE hearings, the DOE permit, which triggers a environmental impact statement, that EIS is likely to take at least a year. It may take longer. And so we're looking, just for the presidential permit, another 18 months anyway. Then there's other in-state permitting I'll talk about in a minute. From the applicant's standpoint, they envision acquiring the rights to land and major construction over the next 4 years and be in service by 2015. I think that's a very aggressive, highly optimistic a plan. I suspect that they understand that that is now too, but they're in the midst of this, so they're going forward. About Hydro-Québec. HQ has 36,000 megawatts of installed capacity, of which 98% is hydropower. By comparison, ISO New England's peak demand for the entire New England grid in the last 5 years at any one time was 28,000 megawatts. That's just to give you a sense of the size of Hydro-Quebec as a power supplier. HQ has flooded 7 million acres to create this electricity. And again, as a comparison, New Hampshire in its entirety is 5.8, 5.9 million acres. So they have flooded an area larger than the state of New Hampshire in order to create this hydropower. In 2008, 8% of HQ's electricity was exported, but it represented 22% of their net income. Clearly what they're doing is exporting energy in order to subsidize their domestic supply of energy. HQ's goals is to export 12% of the total power they produce. They're at 8 now. Their goal is to increase that by 30% to get up to 12%, which they expect to generate 38% of their net income. So from HQ's standpoint, this is not just about Northern Pass. This is about finding ways to punch lines down through the Northern Forest to get to the New England and New York markets. If this doesn't work, they will find another way or look to find another way. They're a very large corporation with assets of more than $60 billion, so it's no small entity that we're dealing with here. This is a picture of one of their hydro facilities under construction. It's fairly massive. And just to give you a sense of scale, this is one of the turbines that provides the hydro power, and you can see some people tucked in there. Up in the right-hand corner to give you a sense of the scale. This is very large stuff. This isn't little trickles of water flowing over a lovely little dam. This is giant hydro. And as any number of people pointed out during the hearing process, this is the kind of project that, in fact, would not be permitted in the United States, which is something that I think about a lot. You know, it's kind of like when we have tennis shoes made overseas or clothes or plastic products and so forth, and we start to think about the working conditions and so forth that are in third world countries in particular, and we're buying products cheaper because we're taking advantage of different regulations in another country. Should we not think about that in the same context here? Where are the lines going to go? And I think many of you are very clear on where the line's going to go. This is a map that we created. In fact, unlike Northern Pass's maps, we chose to put in another existing line. That's the one that drops down through Vermont. So that is an existing high-voltage DC line. It has prompted many people, including many people in this room, to ask the question, well, if you have to have these lines, couldn't they be on the existing line? The answer has been no, although it is from Northern Pass, although the reason for saying no has changed over time. At first was, what's that?
We don't own it.
We don't own it. I think that's more to the point. In any case, the answer went from because of terrorism concerns and weather concerns to it's now the most recent statement has been that it's not physically possible. I'm not an electrical transmission engineer, so I can't know the answer to that question, but I think it's a very good question to keep asking. Here's a map, since we're in Pittsburgh today, here's a map of the close-up of the line in Pittsburgh. How many people here today are landowners in Pittsburgh that are likely to be affected? I see a few hands. And are you on the preferred route or the alternate route? On the alternate route, right.
Actually, that's Pittsburgh and Clarksville that you're showing.
Well. Right.
The Pittsburgh is just on the left.
Right. Right. I don't have my pointer with me today, unfortunately. But yeah, this is the Washburn family
that's
forest.
Route 3 is the borderline. The Connecticut River.
Right. Right here.
Right there. Yeah.
Right.
So to the left is Clarksville, Pittsburgh. To the right is all Clarksville.
So these are the latest maps that they've provided us with either a crossing here, and this is what they say is their preferred route. And you see that it bisects our Washburn family forest. And this is a proposed alternate route here. Dropping down to Stewartstown, here's the line continuing. Now, obviously, as this crowd would know, these are not existing transmission lines. It would be all new corridor, all HVDC corridor, and then dropping down through Colebrook. And if you don't know, if you want to take more time to look more closely at these maps, they are available online on the Northern Pass website, and I'd encourage you to do so. Okay, so big picture issues. One of them, private gain or public benefit. Is this about what's good for Northern Pass, Northeast Utilities, and Hydro-Quebec, or is it about what's good for us or and other people in New England? Energy and consumer issues. This is being touted as renewable energy. Well, yes, it is renewable. Whether or not it's clean energy is another question. There are economic issues. This has been touted as providing tax gains for communities along the way. And they have discounted or trivialized the notion that there's going to be, and already has been, quite a bit of loss in property value by private property owners. There's clearly environmental issues. You can't do commercial development, build more than 1,000 towers across 180 miles without having some impact on the land, as on scenic landscapes as well. So let's talk a little bit about private gain or public benefit. This is a merchant project. This wasn't a matter of a utility going to the ISO New England, the organization that determines the making sure that there's enough electricity for the market, and saying, geez, we see that there's a need. I'm wanting you to make a determination that there's a public need, and then we'll provide a solution to that need. This was simply a company coming forward and saying, we want to do this. And this is how we're going to do it. This would almost certainly require the use of eminent domain to complete the project as proposed. I think the incredible grassroots public outcry over this has shown that not just one person will hold out, not just two people will hold out, but many, many people will hold out. And so this would be not just a small use of eminent domain, but a massive use of eminent domain. And it raises the question of, should corporations be able to use eminent domain for private investment purposes? If this ultimately is to benefit the shareholders of Northeast Utilities and Hydro-Quebec, eminent domain is a power that the government holds. And this is what Larry's point has been in what he's trying to address. And our Constitution suggests that, no, they shouldn't be able to do this, but our law isn't 100% clear when it comes to a transmission project. And so Larry has done a terrific job of trying to create a piece of legislation that addresses that issue. And it's not that it could never be used, even if this law happens to pass. It's about that it raises the bar so that there's some sense that it's required for the reliability of the electrical grid. Do I have that right, Larry?
Yes.
Energy question. Is this a good investment of $1.1 billion? Ultimately, that $1 billion is going to come out of the pockets of the people who are using the electricity that this generates. There's a return on investment here for the power company. And so if we are all collectively going to invest $1.1 billion in a large capital project, is this what we should do? Is this the best way to address our energy needs, either from a standpoint of generating renewable energy? Or what would that $1.1 billion buy us if we tried to reduce our consumption of energy? Could we not reduce our consumption by 1,200 megawatts by spending $1.1 billion to attempt that? And if we did, would that not be helpful to our balance of trade with a foreign country? Would there be any real reduction in fossil fuel energy generation? This is an issue that I personally find particularly bothersome because this is being touted as something, because it's renewable energy, that somehow magically that will automatically mean that we will be reducing the amount of fossil fuel that's being used. Well, PSNH had every opportunity to come forward a year ago when there was a move to suggest that spending $600 million on a new scrubber for the Bow coal plant wasn't and I think the cost of that had doubled from when it was originally proposed. They had an opportunity there to raise their hand and say, you know what, we have a different idea. Let's go ahead and plan for the decommissioning of that of Bow plant, get rid of that coal plant, and instead use this energy we want to bring down from Canada. They didn't say a peep about it at that time. And in fact, when asked about Bow, they have said the Bow plant is or will be the cleanest coal plant in New England. It's not going anywhere. Now, New Hampshire pays the price from an air quality standpoint for Bow, but there were as part of this project, as part of this proposal, there is no guaranteed reduction in fossil fuels. Somehow, magically, the market will take care of it. And in fact, what they're suggesting is that what the reductions will come from their competitors' plants closing down. Well, one can understand they're a business and they act like a business, and there's nothing wrong with acting like a business. You try to put your competitors out of business, and you try to put yourself in a favorable position from competitively relative to your competitors, and that's what we're trying to do. They're importing cheap energy that will help put them in a better position. That's fine, but New Hampshire is being asked to pay the price, and New Hampshire's landscape is being asked the price. That's not fine. Should we be concerned about over-reliance of HQ for electricity in the northeastern U.S.? This isn't an issue that the Forest Society has particularly taken a position on, but it's certainly one that a number of people have raised, and it's worth raising. We complained today about being overly reliant about overseas oil. Do we want to be overly reliant on Canadian hydro? Will New Hampshire consumers' electricity have any access to the power? I think ultimately there will be an announcement of some purchase power agreement, and magically that will supposedly make this project all good, because now we get some of the power. The fact is that we produce more power than we use in New Hampshire. The spin today is that, well, it's all a grid, you can't really divide it up. But what this whole project and process has brought forward is that, and I think, as a huge opportunity, New Hampshire people are now more aware than ever that we're going to have to do some things differently as far as our energy generation in the future. And we can choose to send our money somewhere else and use electricity, or maybe we could start get busy and create our own jobs here and generate our own renewables, whether it's on the household level or the business level or regional levels. Economic questions. This has also been touted as bringing jobs to New Hampshire and added tax revenues. Even Northern Pass has acknowledged that most of the jobs are temporary. The other day, my colleague Will Abbott spoke at the Concord Chamber of Commerce at a forum at which Gary Long, the CEO of PSNH, also spoke. Will made many of the same points that I'm making this afternoon. And Gary stood up and said that he felt it was that we, the Forest Society, were trivializing the jobs that they were bringing to the state. And I thought about that. So this is a matter of perspective. You know, he's trying to make the case that the jobs are more valuable and provide more public benefit than we're giving credit for. And I thought, that started to make me angry, and here's why. Because if anyone has trivialized anything in this process, it is Northern Pass trivializing the feelings and public opinion of landowners up and down the state. It's outrageous. As far as jobs go, yeah, there'll be some temporary jobs. I made the point in Franklin that where some of the jobs will be more permanent, that when you're thinking about, and Franklin is interested in this, Franklin's where the facility would be that would convert the electricity from DC to AC, that there's a lot of different ways to build a thriving community, and Franklin has huge upside, huge. It's right in the Lakes region, it's not far from Manchester Airport, it's not far from Concord, it's not far from I-93, it's on a river, it's within 10 and 20 minutes of Lake Winnipesaukee and 30 minutes of some of the most beautiful places in the country in the White Mountains. It is this kind of small city that people of my generation want to live in. if you look at the demographics and psychographics of Americans. It's huge upside. There's two ways to build a community. One is to recognize that and build a livable place. Another way is to look for someone else to pay your tax obligations. And I think that they are relying too much on looking for someone else to pay their tax obligations. And that when they do have the jobs, all those people who work at those jobs will be living in Northfield. It's very sad. Will the power actually provide a reduction in or greater stability in the price of New Hampshire consumers pay for electricity? There will be some very small reduction. We would trivialize that. I'll be very honest. We don't think it's meaningful when you're looking at the cost. Is it possible to quantify the economic values of New Hampshire landscape that will be negatively impacted? That's something the Forest Society would like to see done, and some of our comments and other people's comments at the EIS hearings were that the DOA should do that as part of the economic impact stuff. Let's quantify this. Let's try to understand what the cost of this is to our landscape so that we can then compare it to the purported benefits. Jim Dennis may talk about some of the work that he's done. There's a suggestion, I think it's very real, that the visual blight will have some impact on our tourism impacts. Well, we ought to measure that, and we ought to compare that. Northern Pass is very good at coming up with some fairly vague statistics and then trying to make a good case out of it. We should come up with even better statistics and make our case. Environmental questions. The power is renewable. Is the power green? I talked a little bit about that. Will it reduce New England's CO2 emissions by the 5 million tons per year claimed by Northern Pass? Once again, that claim has gone down to 2.5 and even lower, and I'm not sure they really know at this point. And the reason they keep backing down is because people like many of you keep asking very specific questions. And when they can't answer those questions, they tend to stop talking about whatever it was they were talking about. Who decides whether the degradation of the New Hampshire landscape is an acceptable trade-off? That's a huge issue and one that the Forest Society continues to push and ask. And I'll talk about some of the permitting here in a second. But the unfortunate thing is there's no vote. There's no vote on this. At no point, we're going to, you know, there'll be a legislative vote on HB 648. But otherwise, there's no vote. We'll be able to put some political pressure on presidential candidates who come here and campaign prior to the primary. But otherwise, we don't get to vote. So we should shout from the mountaintops about that it ought to be in the people's right to decide ultimately whether or not this is appropriate. Now, I was thinking the other day that let's say you started with the idea that we are going to need more renewable power and that Quebec is doing this anyway and it's affordable and that we ought to avail ourselves of some of that renewable power. And we ought to do it on a timeline that makes sense. We don't need the energy today, but let's say that in 20 years or 25 years, we might need that power. How would we go about that? Well, one way, if we were a community trying to decide on a public works project, we would put it out to bid. We would say, we think we need this. All of those who think you have the capacity to do something like this, come forward and make your proposal. And then we would, you know, sort through the proposals and we would negotiate something that in which there was a consensus about how to go forward. And then we would come up with a contract and go forward. Well, that's not what's going on here. This is simply a private company saying, hey, guess what? We can rip a hole down through your state and sell power to our customers down in southern New England. We shouldn't stand for that. Health issues. Many people I know in this room have raised the health issues, and we need to insist that the DOE address those issues, study those issues, and find out a little bit more about them. Of course, we're concerned about impacts on natural resources. If you put a power line through that fragments the forest, it does change it. It impacts wetlands. Even burying, which many people have talked about as an alternative, has tremendous impact on the ground. And there's some folks within the opposition who will not hear of burying at all. We need to understand what those impacts are as we look at those alternatives. And are there other alternatives that have less negative environmental impacts? One of the things that we have talked about, I know the Nature Conservancy has talked about, is the no-build option. And that's one that's specifically mentioned as part of the DOE process. And simply put, it's that let's take a look at what the environmental impact would be, as well as the economic impact, if we don't build this. Well, Northern Pass would make the case that if we don't build this, the environmental impacts would have to do with suffering from continuing to burn fossil fuel, economic impacts that have to do with the price and availability of energy, and so forth. Okay, well, let's try to analyze what those would be, and let's compare it to the build option. I would argue that the no-build option may compare very favorably to the build option. Impacts, yeah. No, that's wider because there's multiple towers. This is down in Hopkinton, I believe. This is the existing national grid. I'm sorry?
Is that both AC and DC?
I believe it is, yes. Yep, I believe it's DC. Now, in the area from Franklin to Deerfield, this is interesting, you know, some of you were there a similar talk he gave in Deerfield. So I wanted to understand a little bit more. I figured somebody would ask me, how tall are the towers going to be in Deerfield and surrounding? So I went on the Northern Pass website to find out if they said anything. Well, they did. What they said was, they're going to be taller on average between Franklin and Deerfield than anywhere else. Right? Because they've got to have a certain separation, apparently, between the AC lines that are already existing there and the high voltage AC lines that they would bring down through there. Something about there needs to be a certain distance. Well, that also, yeah. So one of the things that the Forest Society points we're trying to make among our friends who live between Franklin and Deerfield is that from a visual impact standpoint, even though they're currently living with an AC line, this is going to be dramatic. This is going to go from below the tree line to 2 to 3 times above the tree line.
Bigger than what these are.
Yes, all right. You recognize this. This is taken from the Washburn family forest. Thank you very much, Dallas, and for your making it possible for us to acquire the Washburn family forest. And where is this, John? Do you know where this is? this is Trail 128 up on the Washburn Family Forest. This is looking south, right towards where the gravel pit still exists, and that's where their preferred route, right through there. So from this spot, if I understand it right, you would look up and you would see the lines going right through from that spot. This is taken from the rocks, our 1,400-acre estate in Bethlehem. You'll see down through the middle of there an existing AC power line. That's part of the preferred route, and so those towers would grow too. They'd fertilize those towers and grow them up big, with the presidentials off in the background. Ironically, that smoke back there is a biomass plant. And as many people have pointed out, that this other market conditions as well, but this too would put great pressure on some of our other renewables in the state. This is a picture I took over on the existing national grid line over in Haverhill. Still got snow on the ground because it was on the day of the hearing over in Haverhill. I wanted to take a look and see what it looked like. What I found interesting about the Haverhill hearing, I went over there. It was the 7th of 7 hearings, and I thought that perhaps finally people would be tired of talking. And it was Sunday, and that perhaps there would be some empty seats in the House. That hearing was at 1 o'clock, I think. I showed up at 12:45. The parking lot was full. And you walk in, and everybody up there who's been living with this power lines existing were just as upset as any of you and any of others elsewhere in the state. And as one, yes?
Is
How tall is that one? I've driven under those, and they're not 135.
They're not, no. I don't know how, no, no. I don't know how tall it is.
I think it's very important to address the lies we've been told. How many of you have heard? If we can go wider, we won't have to go as tall. It's the exact opposite. You can go to Hydro Quebec's own website and see their own animated illustration where they show the taller they go, the wider they go. So that has been a lie right to us from them.
Yeah, I'm not a transmission engineer, so I don't know. Clearly it has something to do with the landscape you're crossing and all that kind of stuff. Yeah, you had a...
Just as a point of reference, each one of those darker cross lines, horizontal lines on there, they're about 10 to 12 feet apart.
Okay, yep. So you got 10, 20, 30, 40, 50, 60 feet. Yeah?
Plus the piece on top.
Right. So that's probably a 70-foot... Thank you. All right. So, how does this happen? What hoops do they have to jump through? The presidential permit application review. That's what the DOE hearings. This is a permit that the DOE issues, and it is, as I think most of you know, solely about crossing the international border. You all heard Brian Mills say we have no authority to site a transmission line in the state of New Hampshire. That falls to the New Hampshire Site Evaluation Committee, and that's where I think the real battle will be fought over this. I think it will get tied up into re-election politics, depending on when they make that application. They have not, Northern Pass has not yet put in an application to the SEC for this project. And one of the things that we and others have been doing is pushing the DOE in the scoping of their environmental impact study to include those kinds of things that can help inform the New Hampshire SEC when it comes time for them to consider this project.
Jack, just on the USDA, do you think that they can work with that special use permit to get the approval or try to get approval to go through the grassland reserve in Georgetown? Or would they still have to try to avoid that?
I think that's going to be a separate process. Yeah, a separate process. The White Mountain, what that's about is getting through the White Mountain National Forest. What's interesting is when they made the PR move of dropping, from their perspective, the alternate routes, what they're essentially saying is, we're coming through the White Mountains. We are giving up on the idea of going around the White Mountains. They didn't really ever want to go around the White Mountains. They just felt that the presidential permit process required that they show alternatives, and so they showed them. I think there's still some question that they'll get that permit. We're objecting to that. The Forest Society has been around since 1901. We were founded in part to pass the Weeks Act, which was the enabling legislation celebrating its 100th anniversary this year, that created the Eastern National Forest, including the White Mountain National Forest. We don't think that you should be able to expand that. The White Mountain Forest acquired that particular parcel with the existing line already there. It's not that it was permitted. It'll be interesting to see what happens there. They may feel like that they've got it politically, that they are in a position to make that happen. I don't know. FERC has suggested that they might look more closely at the transmission service agreement in terms of the amount of money that the corporations can pocket as part of this agreement. I'm not sure that that will divert this project necessarily. And then there's also the New Hampshire Public Utilities Commission review of whatever purchase power agreement might be created for the state, for PS&H essentially, to use some of this power for their customers.
Jack?
Yeah.
This little carrot they threw out about broadband. And
yeah.
Susan and her others, it's not even in our original documents.
Right.
Um,
I believe that Northern Pass thinks that they are negotiating.
I think
they are trying to create the impression that they are listening and offering up something. What I heard from landowners along the way was that broadband didn't cut it. Even if you could do it, it didn't cut it, that they're still not getting it. That they're still not understanding that whether it's a payment for the fee, underlying fee value of your land, or a lease agreement for an easement on your land, that there's nothing you can pay to give up your way of life. They don't get that. And so when they come out with, we'll give broadband, that's really about appealing to certain senators in anticipation to, that's really about trying to convince a senator from Keene that they are creating some public benefit and that to throw a roadblock in their way is inappropriate. That's what that's really about. It's a PR move. I don't want to take too much more time, but I should talk about why we've gotten into this fight. We have a legal and ethical obligation to defend existing conserved land, our own properties, like the Washburn Family Forest, like the Rocks Estate. We hold any number of easements all up and down the proposed line. And so we're legally required to defend those. And we've been for 110 years working to defend, create, and promote the scenic values that New Hampshire holds dear and around which we, as a state, have built some pretty strong economies, forest products industry and the tourism industry among them. We think the biomass issue is real and that this will only hurt it. That forest landowners, anybody who owns forest land, understands that having a market for low-grade wood is an important part of their management strategy. If you want to grow good wood, if you want to grow saw timber that you can actually make money off of, that you can help pay your taxes on, you got to get rid of some of the less good wood, and you need a market for it, and biomass is an important part of that. At its essence, there's some environmental issues about defending forests from unnecessary fragmentation. And we need to defend the public benefits that forests provide. I mean, this comes to the trivialization, especially once you get the further south you get, especially once you get down to the Boston area, people don't understand that it's the forest lands that are providing the water you're living on. And if you destroy them, even if it's incrementally over time, you're destroying your own livelihood and your ability to thrive and grow. What are we doing? We're working with our conservation partners. We're doing outreach to our SPINF members. As many of you know, we did a mailing to 65,000 people back in March. We had to hurry up when it was to get in advance of the hearings. There's a copy of Forest Notes. We've got additional messaging there. That went out in the last couple of weeks, and we're hearing many positive comments from other members of ours. We have 10,000 members who live elsewhere in the state and weren't quite clear about this. There are some of those who are helping fund the activities that we are conducting in opposition to this. And we're advocating for a very broad alternative analysis. We've called on Northern Pass and the companies behind it to just stop, reconsider this proposal. We think that's the solution. There may be a way to bring Hydro-Quebec power down south, but this isn't the way to do it, and they need to stop, build consensus around something that makes better sense, and then go forward. You've heard about 658. You can still write the governor. There's some evidence that he is listening. Keep the pressure on. Keep the pressure on your state senator, wherever you are. If you want more information, there's lots of it out there. I'll leave it there. If there's any other questions, I'll be happy to answer them. Thank you very much. Yeah. That's correct. High voltage AC, yes. Yeah, as I understand it, again, I'm not an expert in this, but that Canadian DC isn't synchronous with, or Canadian AC isn't synchronous with U.S. AC. And so they converted to DC, which travels at less of a loss of power over the lines over long distances, and then it's converted back to AC in a form that works with New England's grid. Anybody know better than I, and did I get that right? Yeah, okay.
Any other questions for Jack?
Actually.
Yeah.
The reason is there's lower losses in DC transmission. Hydro-Quebec AC powers half of Vermont.
Oh, is it? Yeah. Okay. All right. So it's more about transmission. Yes, Susan.
Yeah, I have a comment, and I will send you this information because it's kind of complicated, but I spent a full day at the White Mountain National Forest headquarters in Hampton Monday, I guess it was, with their land use specialists and box after box of cardboard files and so on. That corridor through the White Mountain National Forest, the major part of, does not have an easement on it, a pre-existing easement. A couple of small sections do, in other words, White Mountain National Forest bought the land long before PSNH ever came along. They have a couple of pieces that the National Forest acquired later on and used an easement on it. But it's kind of complicated, and I'd be happy to...
Yeah, I would be interested in that, to get a fuller understanding of that. And here's what's important about that kind of thing and all of these details is that we need to keep pushing on the details and understanding the details, because that's the kind of thing that can trip this up, is understanding.
They didn't even know what they had, and they may not still fully know what they have. And right. It took us 3 of us a full day to figure out what it was sitting there with the records, but
okay.
I'll send it to you.
Anyway, there are other speakers. I've taken up too much time. Thank you very much. Be happy to talk to you afterwards.
Thank you, Jack.